So we see that only Moses, alayhi salam, Musa, alayhi salam, survived from those policy. But later, according to many of these scholars, there is a very nice interpretation of this event in the history. They say that the arwah, or the spirits and the souls of these babies, finally, since they are pure, they are mutahhar, they are, let's say, clean and purified, the souls of these babies who are killed by Pharaoh, they later had their spiritual kind of influence on their parents, on the coming generations. And then the coming generation after them, they finally conquered the Egypt, and they finally defeated the Pharaoh.
Yeah.
So even the soul of these babies will finally will have their role in this world, according to the some of the scholars who interpret these kind of events. So I mean that sometimes the bloodshed, of course, it is brutal. It seems to be very much painful. Tragic, I mean. But at the end of the day, we see that it is the oppressor who finally will be defeated. As it happened, for example, in the history of Karbala, we see that Amawids killed Abu Abdullah al-Husayn al-Sawt al-Salam in the most brutal way. But at the end of the day, it was the movements started against Amawids by Tawabin, by Mukhtar al-Saqafi, by Khurasaniyun, or the Abu Muslim al-Khurasani. And finally, they actually stopped, and they actually toppled down the kingdom of Amawids.
Yeah.
So this is the blood of the martyrs, the role of blood of the babies who are martyred, blood of the youngs or the youngsters or the youth or the innocent people who are martyred. Finally, at the end of the day, they will be the victorious.
Yeah. Thank you, Sheikh, for once again for providing us with your beautiful explanation. And, you know, after putting the problem on the table and analyzing it in detail, we, at the end of the day, we come to this point that, okay, we shouldn't be silent, we shouldn't be actually indifferent towards all this oppression in the world. But the question here is that, as you mentioned, Brother Ali, the least we can do is the hatred that we have in our heart towards all these oppressors. But if we really want to do something about it, what should we do?
If we want to do something?
Yeah, really, we want to do something influential about these oppressions around the world. What are the ways, the solutions? What are the things that we can try?
Yeah, actually, as we said earlier, the least that we can do is to show our hatred. I mean, to see that we really find our, we really want to say that this act of this action that has been happening, this oppression, we have no tendency towards that, and we have no relation with that. I mean, we actually we want to say that we have we do not agree with what is happening. It starts from inside, and then we can show it in our words, as I said, in by our pen, by our speeches in different areas, in different places. Once you see some people can have a good influence in cyberspace, in media. Let's say at least we can show our enmity or our disagreement with these actions that's happening, at least in the page that we have. I don't know if those who are familiar and acquainted with social platforms. If, for example, we have a page in Facebook, in Instagram, or anywhere in X or Twitter, former Twitter, we can show our disagreement with what is happening. Second, we can work on the enlightenment of the people, to enlighten those who need to know. It starts from our family, our the people who are around us, our community, to tell them that about the oppression that is happening. And regardless of the religious aspect of this oppression and the duty that we have on our shoulder, from the perspective of a person as a human being, that what is the natural reaction toward this action that is happening, towards this oppression that is happening that part of the world, in any part of the world. So showing this disagreement is the least that we can do. But in case there is a possibility of doing something, so it is on us to defend and to defending. I mean, the person who is under oppression. So, if there is a possibility of us, we see different cases in the world today that those who are able, they have found their duty and they act upon they acted upon that accordingly.
Thank you, Brother Ali, and thank you, Sheikh Rouhani. As we are all aware of the modern world and the weapons that we have in our hands, which is the social medias, we can use it into our own specific benefits to show other people the true meaning of being a human being, which this concept is kind of being faded away, unfortunately, nowadays. And so the first step before all of these is to understand and analyze the value of not being silent, the value of standing for what you think is true and what is true. So thank you for listening to us, dear listeners. It was all the time we had for today's episode. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to us you've always been so close. Everyone will say, please save me, accept Allah. يقولها لنا يوم القيامة أمتي أمتي يقولها شفاعة أنا لها أنا لها
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Weeks of relentless Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip has raised concerns about the health situation there. The World Health Organization has warned that more people could die from diseases than from bombings in the Gaza Strip if the health and sanitation systems are not prepared.
Actually, we will see more people dying from disease than we are even seeing from the bombardment if we are not able to put back this health system and provide the basics of life, food, water, medicines, and of course fuel to operate the hospitals.
Critical infrastructure in the besieged territory has been crippled by fuel and supply shortages and targeted attacks on hospitals and the UN facilities since Israel launched strikes on Gaza on October the 7th. All key sanitation services have ceased operating in Gaza, which raises the prospect of an enormous surge of gastrointestinal and infectious diseases among the local populations, including cholera. For Gaza's 2.3 million residents, half of whom are children, finding drinkable water has become close to impossible. The WHO has recorded more than 44,000 cases of diarrhea, and 70,000 acute respiratory infections, but real numbers may be significantly higher. Diarrhea increased by 45 times compared with the same period last year, and other diseases from respiratory infections to hygiene issues such as lice have risen. Almost three-quarters of hospitals in Gaza and two-thirds of primary healthcare clinics have shut down because of damage from hostilities or lack of fuel.
No medicines, no vaccination activities, no access to safe water and hygiene, and no food. We saw a very high number of cases of diarrhea among infants, and again, there was no treatment available for them. You know, if you have a child with diarrhea, you need to give them rehydration in order to keep them.
The health needs of the population of Gaza have increased dramatically, but they are now being serviced by one-third of the hospitals and primary care clinics. And with severe overcrowding, the risks are increasing for epidemics of respiratory tract infections, acute watery diarrhea, hepatitis, scabies, lice, and other diseases.
Health facilities in the Gaza Strip have borne the brunt of Israel's brutal war. Officials have described the situation in northern Gaza as catastrophic amid a lack of medicine and fuel.
The situation is very difficult. The patients, the injured, and the martyrs are lying on the ground. The medical staff is not enough, and there are no treatments. My brother is injured, and his condition is very difficult. We wait all day for treatments and medications. There are no medicines and medical equipment.
They say hospital beds are completely full, and wounded people are lying on the ground. Experts now warn the humanitarian crisis would deepen fast if Israel started bombing Gaza again, because people have been so weakened by almost 2 months of attacks. UN officials have warned that alleviating the crisis requires the urgent entry of additional aid and supplies in a smooth, predictable, and continuous manner to lessen the unbearable suffering of Palestinians in Gaza. Despite the temporary truce agreements between Israel and Hamas, officials in Gaza say no fuel had arrived for generators at hospitals in the territory's north. They say that without fuel, the territory could not pump clean water or clear waste accumulating in the streets, warning of a potential public health catastrophe.
Pursuant to the health status in the northern Gaza Strip, only three hospitals are still operating, but they cannot cover the health requirements inside the Gaza Strip, as these hospitals are small and there are 900,000 people left. In addition, the health situation in the northern Gaza Strip is currently desperate because of the inaccessibility of medical aid and fuel to the hospitals in the north.
United Nations Children's Funds is also working on creating safe places for children, but it needs a longer break in fighting to heal.
Threats to children are very much from the air and now very much on the ground. He was terrified as a medical professional in terms of the disease outbreak that is lurking here and how that will devastate children who are immune systems and lack of food already is making them perilously weak. Again, anecdotally, as a non-medical professional, when I'm in hospitals, yeah, it's children with wounds of war and it's children with gastro and who are sick everywhere. And I meet a lot of parents who are medical professionals or at least have master's degrees. They know exactly what their children need. They don't have access.
Meanwhile, UN reports that Israeli bombardments have destroyed or damaged 60% of homes in the besieged territory. It's said in Gaza City and North Gaza specifically, intense bombing has resulted in damage to over 50% of all buildings. The report said the strikes have also caused widespread damage to roads and essential infrastructure, such as power systems and distribution networks and water supply equipment.
Kissinger, influential American politician and career diplomat, has died at the age of 100. Kissinger served as both National Security Advisor and Secretary of State under President Richard Nixon and continued as Secretary of State under Nixon's successor, Gerald Ford. However, he left a dark legacy ranging from supporting dictators and terror squads to directing coups and ordering war crimes. Kissinger is known for his role in carpet bombing of Cambodia during the Vietnam War, which caused the death of 150,000 civilians in a neutral country. The indiscriminate bombing campaign was expressed in Kissinger's infamous order to an American general when he said, quote, "anything that flies and anything that moves." The civilian death toll in Cambodia was more than those killed in U.S.-led wars against several West Asian countries over the past two decades. Kissinger's genocidal campaign also enabled the rise of Cambodia's Khmer Rouge dictatorship. Yet, ironically enough, Kissinger was awarded a Nobel Peace Prize for ending a war which he had blood on his hands. Kissinger was also involved in a CIA-hatched coup against Chile's socialist leader, Salvador Allende, in 1973. The coup was followed by a regional campaign of political repression and assassination in South America, dubbed Operation Condor, that resulted in the killing of 50,000 people, as well as disappearance and imprisonment of nearly 500,000 people in several South American countries under U.S. ally dictatorships. Kissinger also supported former West Pakistan dictator Yahya Khan, whose army carried out a massive genocidal campaign against Bengali-speaking people in East Pakistan that led to the 1971 war and finally the creation of Bangladesh. Kissinger's other infamous moves include his support for Indonesian leader Suharto, who invaded East Timor in 1975. Tens of thousands of Timorese people were killed in two decades of occupation initiated by Suharto. Kissinger also presided over a writing of a secret national security memo in 1974 recommending the U.S. government to force depopulation of third world countries to weaken their national power, ensure America's access to their resources, and prevent young population rising against U.S. imperialist control. After leaving government in 1977, Kissinger remained a prominent voice in foreign policy circles for decades. Even into his late 90s, he continued attending global events, consulting business clients, and privately advising American presidents. He has been lauded for his incredibly sharp memory and unique analytic powers, but his bloody record is a testimony that superior human intelligence, combined with inferior moral sensitivities, can be a source of incredible evil rather than good.
On the release of Palestinian captives, Israel said no celebrations or they will be arrested again, showing Israel's dehumanizing behavior. Palestinians celebrated anyways. When it comes to Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, Israel has failed. To begin with, it lost the war from day one, when Operation Al-Aqsa Flood was executed by Hamas resistance fighters. The truce is another sign of Israel's failure, since it was not able to defeat one of its stated goals, the destruction of Hamas. According to senior Hamas official Osama Hamdan, Israel has also suffered a military defeat. Since October 7th, between 70 to 80 Israeli soldiers have been taken out by Hamas fighters, while 385 tanks have been destroyed. But another front that Israel has suffered a defeat, a humiliating one at that,
do not look away,
is the social media war. Not only has Israel lost the information war, Western media, no matter how hard they have tried, could not silence pro-Palestinian voices. Social media networks have also tried in vain to block and delete anti-Israeli posts, which they called anti-Semitic, like Facebook. Facebook approved ads that contained sentences like "murder Palestinian civilians," "wipe out Gazan women, children, and the elderly." The U.S. has played a dubious role when it comes to its stance on the Israeli war in Gaza. On the one hand, the U.S. Secretary of State Blinken is said to want to press Israel to end the war in his upcoming trip to the region. This is while the U.S. President will move to grant Israel unfettered access to U.S. weapons stockpile. The U.S. President has also said eliminating Hamas is very difficult, but not impossible, which is part of the reason why pro-Palestinian protests have continued unabated around the world, since many see the U.S. key in ending the war. Many celebrities have come out in support of Palestine and against U.S. unwavering support for Israel, especially when it comes to military aid. U.S. actress and activist Cynthia Nixon has launched a hunger strike, calling for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza in front of the White House in Washington, D.C., an unprecedented move by a Hollywood actress.
To have a hunger strike to get attention, but also to say, yes, we are bombing and killing Palestinians in that way, but we're also starving them. 7% of the nutrition that's needed for a population of 2 million people has been allowed into Gaza. And so certainly many people are dying from bombs, but so many people in Gaza are on the hunger, on the precipice of starvation. And so that's why we're having a hunger strike to reflect the horror of that.
She was joined by state legislators and activists also.
I think about how much anxiety and depression and fear and all those emotions that Gazans are feeling every day.
We have lost an entire society. Cities have been flattened. And if President Biden does not demand a permanent ceasefire, all of Gaza could be lost.
Israel is so afraid of the backlash. The Israeli lobby has offered $20 million to a candidate of Arab origin to compete with U.S. Senator Rashida Tlaib in the Michigan elections.
I was offered $20 million to withdraw from the senatorial race and run against my friend Rashida Tlaib.
As if that wasn't enough, the Israeli lobby is so worried about U.S. Congress dissent due to the war that it was reported it spent big money trying to purge its critics from the Democratic Party.
The pro-Israel lobby will go to any length to remove anybody from the U.S. Congress that has any opposition to their agenda, and their total, unequivocal support for Israel, good, bad, or indifferent.
Israel persecutes Palestinians by malign detainment practices. There are currently about 8,000 Palestinians in Israeli jails, including 3,000 detained over the past 7 weeks since the events of October 7th. Over 2,000 of the detainees are being held under administrative detention. Those legally charged are judged by Israeli military courts with a near-total conviction rate. There are hundreds of children among the detainees. At least 700 Palestinian children under 18 are prosecuted every year by Israel. Administrative detention refers to detention without charge or trial. The practice is illegal under international law. Under the prisoners' exchange deal between Israel and Hamas, several dozen Palestinian prisoners, mostly women and children, will be released. Two of the prominent released prisoners are Marah Bekir, a 24-year-old girl who was released after 8 years in prison. She was brutally injured and detained by the Israeli police in 2015 when she was 16 years old. During her detention, she was abused and humiliated by Israeli security staff. Malek Soleiman, another 24-year-old girl, released after 8 years in prison. She was kidnapped as a 16-year-old by the Israeli police on her way back from school.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinda dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by the late Ayatollah Agha Mujtaba Tehrani. Please stay tuned.
در یه روایتی از علی علیه السلام فرماید الصبرو اما علی المصیبه.
There is a narration which quotes Imam Ali alayhi salam stating, patience is required with respect to three things: grief and calamity, obedience to Allah, and abstaining from sins, of which the third one is of higher priority than the first two. Patience with respect to obeying Allah involves the obligatory acts, the wajibat. Patience with respect to refraining from disobeying Allah means not committing the prohibited acts or muharramat. Then Imam Ali alayhi salam goes on to say that the third type of patience is of utmost importance. Why? It lays the foundation of the other two. In other words, Allah only accepts the obligatory acts of those individuals who are not disobedient to Him, meaning the ones who refrain from committing sins. The Holy Quran states, Allah only accepts from the God-very. Who are the God-very? They are those who do not disobey Allah. Therefore, Imam Ali alayhi salam states that this third type of patience, which is refraining from Allah's disobedience, is of higher priority than the first two types. If one does not refrain from committing sins, his obligatory acts are not accepted either. There is yet another narration which quotes Imam Ali alayhi salam as saying, the greatest and most rewarding type of patience is the one practiced with respect to the things which you love and hold dear. Now we come to the matters which deal with the heart. That type of patience is the greatest, which pertains to those things to which one is strongly attached.
دلکندن صبر میخواد. دلکندن.
What does this mean? It means forsaking something to which you are attached requires great patience. So in general, we conclude that God-weariness or piety, taqwa, builds the foundation of all the levels of spirituality. This is the case, whether it is general or specific piety. General piety means the kind which is extrinsic in nature, and specific piety means the kind which is intrinsic in nature, such as not feeling jealous of others or proud of oneself, and so on and so forth. Therefore, for us humans, being to be pious is Allah's ultimate request from us. Allah only wants one thing from us, and that is taqwa, piety, with its most basic level being the one with respect to the bodily actions and pleasures of the flesh. Then comes the levels of piety that pertain to the soul, the heart, and the other higher levels of it. So piety is what Allah wants from us. There is one narration which quotes Imam Ali alayhi salam as saying, piety of Allah's servants pleases Him more than anything else, and it is Allah's ultimate wish for His creation. The last thing Allah wants from us, the ultimate thing which Allah wishes for us to have, is piety. This is what He wants from His servants. This is the one wish He has for His creation. It must also be noted that piety itself is inseparable from patience. Thank you. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by the late Ayatollah Agha Mujtaba Tehrani. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all and fi amanillah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is your host, Zainab. In this program, we discuss your curious questions you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Quran and the narrations of Holy Prophet, may peace be upon him and his purified family. Well, today in our studio, we have the pleasure to be with Brother Miqdad. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, brother.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
So, Brother Miqdad, in our previous episode, you ended up the session with a very beautiful story. And before that, you told us it's very important that we develop the strength in our children so that they can filter things, they can think rationally, they cannot take in everything, whatever is being spoon-fed to them through media or through TV or through social media or any other side. It's important to develop kind of media literacy in them by making them realize how to analyze things. And then we also discussed many things, and then the beautiful story towards the end of the last episode. Now I would want to again ask you, what are the things that we can do in the upbringing of our children so that they become influential or they have positive impact towards others and do not get influenced negatively from others?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So we've talked about TV and how to create a filter. We talked about making a cup full. We talked about feeling and having empathy, so feeling the pain of others and creating us this attitude and this idea and this trait that we feel the pain of others, that we want to help and we wish to help others. Today I'd like to talk about one other point related to how we can impact others, and that is and how to train our children to wanting to impact others, wanting to be influential and positively impact others. And that is to create a pleasure in helping others.
Yeah.
There's a very beautiful hadith from Amir al-Mu'minin whereby he says, Al-Karimu yabtahiju bifadlih. That the Karim, the one who has ikram, the one who has respect, self-respect and self-esteem, is somebody who, when he does fadl, when he helps others, he has a sense of happiness in him.
Yeah. Right?
He said a sense of pleasure, but it's a positive sense of pleasure. It's a positive sense of happiness. It's an internal sense of contentment, internal sense of joy that I enjoy helping others.
Right.
And this is something that we need to train our children with. We need to create for them opportunities to help others, whereby they will have a sense of joy in doing so. Regarding this, so first and foremost, you always create opportunities for children. You create opportunities for them, and you make it an opportunity whereby they will enjoy it.
Enjoy.
Right? Not, it shouldn't be khidmah. It shouldn't be helping others, but it as a core, as a very difficult and tedious and painful moment. No. Allow it also to have a sense of joy in it. Allow it to sense of pleasure in it.
You remind me of a very beautiful hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam when he says that if you want to test who is a believer, test them at three places. Test them or see what they are doing when they are when it's the time of azan, when the prayers are called upon, and just test them how they help others. Test them how they keep the secrets of others. If they reveal the secrets, they definitely are not among us. If they are not engaged in performing wuzu when it's the time of azan, then they are again not among us. And also see how they help others. We mostly have people who have this sense of helping others, but how they help is very important, because Imam does not say over here, do they help others or not? Imam says how they help others is very important. So we'll actually discuss more with you. We'll shed more light on the topic after a short break. The listeners, stay tuned.
Hey, stop! I got a better game!
IRIB English Radio presents a priceless gift to parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this israf to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. Englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. Brother McDowd is with us. Brother McDowd, you said that we have to develop this sense in our children that when they are giving in to the society, when they are giving in to others, they have this sense of joy within them. And it's really important. Sometimes parents can lead as examples, because sometimes we give away and then we don't have that joy, or we just, sometimes we are not even appreciated in our family, or we are said, Was it you the only one who was supposed to be in the front line of helpers? So this should not happen in a family, because parents have to lead by example when it comes to upbringing.
Exactly. So allowing this sense of pleasure is very important. Sometimes, as you mentioned, we belittle the work, or we condemn the person for being helpful or for giving their time. And sometimes this idea of being helpful as well, we have misunderstood the idea of sincerity sometimes. And you feel like if a child is happy with their work and they feel that I really enjoyed helping, for example, giving charity, or helping, for example, clean the mosque, or I helped do this and I felt really happy. And you feel like, oh no, if you're happy, then you're insincere. You're doing it for the wrong reason.
Right.
This is not correct. This is a hadith I just read to you, right? Where the Ma'asum says that this is how the Kareem is. The Kareem feels happy. He feels and he enjoys helping. And this is a normal feeling. I mean, as human beings, when we help others, we naturally feel happy about the fact that we've helped others. And this doesn't go against the sincerity. No, It doesn't. Being insincere means helping others for fame, for example, or helping right. others with minnat, with a sense of like you are indebted to me.
Mm-hmm.
But no, feeling a sense of happiness is actually a good thing. And you want children to feel happy when they've helped others, to enjoy helping others. And so we need to create an opportunity for children to help. And it should be an opportunity where they enjoy it, where they feel happy about it, when they feel appreciated about it. Yes, in the long run, it shouldn't be the sense of the source of motivation for them to do this. But this will come, inshallah, with time, where they will realize that I help others for higher purpose and higher goal. But the sense of happiness, this ibtihaja, is important and it's there. And we should encourage our children to enjoy helping others and don't take that pleasure away from them.
Right. Yeah. Again, reminds me of something. A couple of months ago, when it was really very, very hot, my son came in and he was like, he's just 7 years old. He came and he took two bottles of water from home. And I was like, where are you going? He said that it's too hot and I have put outside a stand of salavati. And I was like, what is a stand of salavati? And he was like, my friend has got some disposal glasses and I got water. So we do have set up a stand outside and we are telling people to have a cold water in return of a salavat. So let's
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
So let's discuss more about this topic after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
Ya muqiya al-khayrat, ya muqiya al-khayrat, ya muqiya al-khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Brother Miqdad. And we're discussing something very important. How do you generate that sense in your children to feel a sense of joy when they help others? So, Brother Miqdad, when I was saying this story, my son did this thing. He set up a stand of salavati and giving cold water to people in the hot summer. After that, he discussed with me. He was really, really happy just giving out water to people. So I also encouraged him. His father also encouraged him later in the day. And we were actually surprised. How did he get these ideas? So sometimes with being with friends or living within a particular community, your children develop those qualities and that should be appreciated, basically.
Definitely. I mean, you mentioned the story. It happened to my son a couple of days ago where he joined a salawati stand as well and he was helping serve others and he was really enjoying. And he came back saying that a few people gave him money because he was serving juice to them. And obviously he was very happy to get money because that means I can buy ice cream. So I was teaching him, maybe you can give the money to the salawati stand rather than in your pocket. But the point that he, in the end, he did give the money away to the salawati stand, to the stand that was serving Jews. But there was a sense of extreme joy and happiness of being able to help others, to serve others.
Right.
It's interesting that this happiness, some of the teachers, they say that this happiness, which is a natural human happiness of helping others. In fact, before I mention what the scholar says, in fact, if you look at studies as well, there is studies that suggest that this act of helping others, this act of charity, is actually a source that produces hormonal change and gives us
sense of happiness. Of
happiness and
contentment.
A boost of pleasure. Contentment, exactly. So this is normal and we should encourage our children to be like that a lot. And this is through creating opportunities. Mm-hmm. The scholar says that, in fact, if we are able to create enough opportunities for our children to serve others, to help others, and the more they feel this sense of happiness, this sense of happiness is greater than the sense of happiness they feel when they watch TV.
Right.
And so he's saying that if you are able to create enough opportunities for them to help others, to serve others, actually children would prefer doing this than watching TV.
Right.
Because they feel happy. They feel happy serving others. They feel happy being useful to others. And this happening is so great that they will abandon TV to do this work. And it's been seen. I mean, you watch it. If you observe children that are very active, that do a lot of things in the streets, in the local mosque, in the local center, they don't have time for TV. TV doesn't bring about a sense of joy in them anymore.
Right.
I feel like, oh, TV is a babyish thing, right? You've heard this in all the children.
It's a kiddish thing now.
Yeah, it's a babyish thing. Babies watch TV. Like, right. We've got important things to do. We need to help others out.
Right.
We need to go to hospital. We need to do this
be
and do that. Exactly. They feel proud. They feel a positive pride. They feel useful. They feel worthy. And they feel a sense of happiness and contentment in helping others. And this is something we need as parents to provide the opportunity for that to
our children. Right. Thank you so much, Brother Meghnath, for being with us and helping us with those beautiful points. And inshallah, may Allah give us the tawfiq to apply all that in our lives. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you have any questions, please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And you can also go to the official website to listen to our programs, which is www.parstoday.ir/en. There's a tab, Call of Islam, and you'll find an archive of our programs there. In case you want to listen to our programs on social media platforms, just search Call of Islam Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
In the limelight.
Students at a London university have remained barred from campus following their participation in two pro-Palestine rallies. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, students at a London university are demanding that they be allowed to return to classes after they were suspended following Palestine solidarity action held before and after the October 7th attack. The School of Oriental and African Studies, SOAS, suspended 4 students and 3 alumni recently for violating health and safety protocols following 2 pro-Palestine rallies held on September 29th and October 9th. The students and alumni, some of whom are members of SOAS Palestine Society Committee, took part in 2 rallies, one on September 29th during the Students' Union's Freshers' Fair and another outside the main entrance to the university on October 9th, shortly after the Zionist regime began bombing Gaza following October 7th. An internal report by the university, seen by the Middle East Eye, alleges that the students moved towards the entrance and attempt to occupy a staircase at one of the rallies. It reports that a fire alarm was activated shortly afterwards. The suspended students have denied their involvement in activating the alarm and told MEE that their suspensions were still in force as of December 2nd, with no timeline given for when they could return to their classes. One of the students told MEE, requesting anonymity, "We started chanting on the steps of the main building, where protests have always happened. In the last 18 months, there has been a real escalation in the way security has responded to student protest. So in this case, they shut all the doors of the building and security officers were filming us on their phones," the student said, adding, "Around 20 minutes in, the fire alarm went off because all the doors were shut. People were unsure of what was going to happen." The student said demonstrators left the building and moved towards a green space away from the main entrance. 3 days later, the participating students were informed that they had violated health and safety procedures and that they would be suspended as a precautionary measure. The alumni were barred from campus without a disciplinary hearing. The student said the allegation was very vague. The university administrator said that the students did not move fast enough when the fire alarm went off. There was a 30-meter gap between the demonstration and the people exiting the building. SOAS has insisted that the suspensions are unrelated to Palestine solidarity activism and that the students breached agreed-upon conditions with management. Members of the Palestine Society, however, say that they were not notified of these conditions until after the rally took place. The Palestine Society said in a statement posted on X, "This is a targeted act of political repression against." A number of the suspended students are committee members of the Palestine Society, with many members who were not present at the rally reportedly being issued with warnings. Another student told MEE, "This includes racialized students, Arab students, and international students on precarious visas. The intention is to silence the Palestine Society at this critical time. We want to get organized, and they are silencing us." According to one student, the academic board asked university administrators to drop the suspensions, but the request was rejected. Some of the students told MEE that they were seeking legal action and suing the university for discrimination under the Equality Act, as they believe they were targeted on the basis of their political beliefs. Despite some small protests continuing on campus, the students reported that the suspensions had a chilling effect on discourse about Palestine, with a lecturer reporting on X that Palestine solidarity posters had been removed from her office door. "Those who are confident enough to protest are now barred from campus. Many on campus are scared to do anything in case they get suspended as well," a student said. According to one student, elected officers at SOAS are facing pressure both from the student union CEO and the university not to support the suspended students. When contacted for comment, a SOAS spokesperson said, "While there is an ongoing investigation into health and safety breaches, the triggering of fire alarms and vandalism on our campus, we cannot comment on the details of the suspensions." According to Truth Out, a pro-Palestine sit-in protest at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, earlier in November sparked a slew of accusations of anti-Semitism and violence from a pro-Israel group, coupled with a concerted effort to permanently ban a student group calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. The Coalition Against Apartheid, CAA, at the center of organizing around ending the Zionist regime's occupation of Palestine, has become a target. But despite this campaign in an already stifling climate around Palestine activism, with several universities banning pro-Palestine groups, students remain undeterred to continue their advocacy. Safiya Ogundi, president of MIT's CAA, told reporters, "There is a strong sense among the organizers within the CAA and within the broader coalition that we will be continuing to push forward and won't be swayed by any of these intimidation tactics that have been levied by the administration. I would honestly say that we are in a really strong position." On November 9th, MIT's CAA helped organize a protest on campus at Lobby 7, the main entrance to the campus. The plan was to stage a 12-hour peaceful sit-in protest. Nothing new for Lobby 7, which was the stage for a Black Lives Matter protest in 2019. The demonstrators plan to build on previous pro-Palestine actions over the past several weeks since the war on Gaza began, including a call for the university to end its MISTI Israel Lockheed Martin Seed Fund. The fund is an initiative that promotes an exchange between faculty and students at MIT and at universities and public research institutions in Israel, including at Lockheed Martin, an American defense contractor. However, the night before the protest was scheduled, organizers received notice that Lobby 7 was no longer a space that could be used to hold demonstrations on campus. Francesca Rico Eckerman, a PhD student at MIT, said, "If you're visiting MIT for the first time and you walk in the building, Lobby 7 is where you go. It's a very famous and historic place to hold protest. So for MIT, the night before, to send out communication saying, by the way, you're no longer allowed to protest in Lobby 7, and if you do, you're breaking MIT policy, was a shady move."
وَقَضَى رَبُّكَ أَلَّا تَعْبُدُوا إِلَّا إِيَّاهُ وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Hossein Latifi, and welcome to another episode of your program For Humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program, we talk about the concept of human being in the Holy Quran, and in the previous episodes, we talk about how the Holy Quran designates and introduces a plan for the perfection of mankind, which consists of both righteous deeds and the faith. And in the last episode, we were talking about one of the origins of the righteous deeds, which was patience, and how important and significant it is in the overall journey of mankind towards perfection. In this episode, we want to continue our discussion about patience and different categories of patience with respect to the object of patience, meaning patience upon and towards what. According to the verses of the Holy Quran, there are different cases and occasions which require patience. For example, one of them is the patience when it comes to the situations of worshipping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. To be committed to the worship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and to have perseverance in that way, it requires patience. The verse reads, رَبُّ السَّمَوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَمَا بَيْنَهُمَا فَعْبُدْهُ وَاسْتَبِرْ لَعِبَادَتِهِ. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the Lord of the heavens and earth and whatever that is between them. So worship Him and be patient in worshipping Him. وَاسْتَبِرْ لِعِبَادَتِهِ. So this happens for us. Some of us, unfortunately, we don't have